Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. It's in the black belt. You catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts, the various programs on Time for Awakening, and interesting articles that you can download, read, or listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have a special guest joining us in the second hour of the program. The chairman, Fred Hampton Jr., will be joining us to talk about various issues that affect the black community. It's coming up on the 49th anniversary of the murder of Fred Hampton Sr. on December the 4th, 1969. So we'll be reflecting on those things, reflecting on current events, things going on now, and in a conversation with the chairman, Fred Hampton Jr., which he will be joining us in the 8 o'clock hour. But from 7 till 8, we'll be in the open forum. We'll kick around some issues, talk about some current events. You can join the conversation always by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Wall Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour-guided African-American Museum, here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It's, here we go with another temperature swing. I hope the listening audience don't mind my off-the-cuff weatherman reporting, but it just kills me sometimes, you know. I get all prepared for the cold, and well, we almost at 60.
Yeah, I know.
In December, especially after they just told us that they had a earthquake in Antarctica. I mean, it was in Anchorage, mm-hmm. Alaska, you know, which is interesting in itself. I don't know if I'm an undercover conspiratorialist, Elliot, because it just seems interesting. In Anchorage, they have nuclear missile sites. So we never know whether it was actually an earthquake or one of them detonations going off that shook the buildings there. But I'll leave that alone because there's a lot of strange and funny things going on around here, one place or another. The grid goes down or whatever. But that's you know. But I'll take the warm weather no matter how I come.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh, man. Richard, anything going on in the community announcements or whatever?
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because it's two and getting around this week. It's a lot of, in Philadelphia, there's a lot of activity going on, you know, and trying to consolidate. Now, I noticed in some of the events that I was able to attend, some of the brothers and sisters that are part of ASCAP, which is the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, they're having a conference study meeting, and that's in December this month, the 15th, starting at 10 o'clock at the, you know, Ellie, I was a board member at a charter school, African Center Charter School called Kepper. And so I have a fondness of the school, even though I have a criticism of our educational process. But it's still active and it's still culturally exposing to the best of its ability, you know, the students that come through there. And it seems that ASCAP on December is having a regional meeting. And they'll have some of the people we've, you know, had guests on the show, like Brother Keel Parker. They'll have someone who's familiar to Philadelphia, political activist, Michael Cord, Dr. Tayana Nayahu, and a Brother Samari, and others that will be a part of that event, making presentations. And their topic, which is interesting, freeing the African mind of Eurocentric history, consciousness, and worldview. Do we need that in this moment in time, Elliot? At least being clear and constantly reinforcing whether we need to be freeing our African mind or Eurocentric history and consciousness and worldview. I would say yes. And something I guess we're constantly always talking about from one way or another, and especially as it relates to political formation. But there's another event happening in Philadelphia, but this is not until February. And these sisters and brothers are a lot of them are teachers or working in the school system. And this is their third annual conference. And that is the Philadelphia Black History Collaborative. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, and we've had Sister Nzinga's group.
Okay.
Who's a part of that.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
And they'll be having their conference in February 9th. And that'll be in another section of the city at another school, which is Mastery Shoemaker. And that's at 53rd and Media. So, you know, and that'll be from 8 to 4. And it's interesting what their topic is. You know, I think Philadelphia, we're actually working through this here of what is African-centered and what is it to mobilize around the politics and the education, because their topic is African-centered education, past, present, and future. So they'll be having a host of people coming in as far as students, educators, community organizers, and community members to, you know, provide workshops and dealing with that question or dealing with looking at that overview. Kind of like what you always talk about, Elliot, as far as being a think tank.
Okay.
You know, taking that time and looking at African-centered education, past, present, and future. So those are two things that I like to inform the, you know, Time for Awakening audience until they occur, because I think they're both important to kind of, you'll hear me use the term civilization. And with ASCAP, we've constructed our historical view from a civilizational perspective going back to ancient Kemet or Egypt. And I think that we should when we're looking at our making our political analysis of our current reality and how we're going to reshape ourselves as new people in this environment, we should look at ourselves from that civilization perspective. And I think that what the Philadelphia Black History Collaborative is, they're constantly trying to tell us that we should take control of our historical narrative, which, you know, the clip you played from John Henry Clark all the time, you know, keeps emphasizing the importance of history. So I think if the listening audience don't get, can be able to come out to these events or come up if they're in the tri-state area, or maybe be able to plug in some other kind of way, it might be important to continue that dialogue on how we see that in shaping our strategic vision.
Yeah, that first event, when did you say that date was again, Richard?
That's December 15th.
Okay.
And that'll be at the Kepler Charter School, which is at 926 West Sedgley Avenue. And that's from 10 to 6.
Okay. All right. That date is, what day is that?
That's a Saturday.
Okay. All right.
Both of them are Saturdays.
So, you know, and I'm glad that you're mentioning this, because Philadelphia is no different than any other cities where we are. It's stuff going on. I don't want to say stuff. It's things going on. It's minds being active in a lot of these issues centering around our existence here and what we need to do moving forward. So it's plenty of things for people to join in with, people, both young and old, that are looking for solutions. Sure, it has to start with talk first, but talk translates into action a lot of times, especially when you get around people that want, that are sincere about what they're doing. So, you know, these things are going on, and it's good that we can announce it and be part of it and be active with the people that are part of these movements. So, you know, I'm glad
I think I'm taking prerogative, if you don't mind, Elliot, and you could stop me, you know, because, you know, and I think I've mentioned it before, I'm working on this project in Philadelphia, and it ties to what you're saying and what we can do. And I think it was one of the guests, and I have to go back and actually, so to give them credit, where they said, we have a lot of jobs, you know. People say Black people don't have no job, but we got a lot of jobs, you know. Now, they may not pay. They may not give you the medium exchange called dollars. But in relationship to building a people in our different locales, there is a lot of jobs. And it goes to the point that you're saying. It's a lot of work being done, and it's a lot of jobs out here for people to really – You basically don't even have to give your resume, other than their willingness to work in essence of building the community, of building African people, of taking ownership of our own self. And I say that because one of the things that I'm working on, that we're, you know, as a volunteer at the African American Museum, which is, again, a public institution that was put together in 1976 by community activists because of the 200-year celebration of the bicentennial, and they were going to overlook African people in Philadelphia. And, like, we didn't exist when this here American project came into being, and the contradiction that it had and how we supported, they were just going to overlook us. And that those activists of that time made it that they were going to put a museum in place. And here, you know, now, from, you know, 1976 to 2018, somebody like myself, you know, takes on this job that don't have a medium exchange with other members of the community. And we say, well, let's link up with the libraries, which, you know, you always talk about how we pay our tax dollars. It goes to the libraries, right? And those libraries are supposed to be another institution that supports in the development of us and our children in relationship of providing information so we can make good decisions in relationship to our life. So we should utilize that institution for our benefit. That's a job that we can do. So we said that, you know, the volunteers, the docents of the museum said, well, why can't we bring together the, you know, suggest to the museum organization, administration, well, bring together the cultural institutions that are in the city. Because it seems that we believe culture is the foundation of education for African people, for Black people, right? We proposed that to the museum. We proposed it to the library, the regional library, and the section of the city of West Philadelphia. And it's coming, and it's, and to, I want to say to my surprise, right? But, you know, you have to be open about this, you know. It's coming into being. And right now we have like 10 community, these what's being called micro museums in Philadelphia. And Philadelphia has a lot of people who've taken on this work, taken on jobs, and created museums. The Marian Anderson Museum, the Paul Robeson Museum. We have a Colored Girls Museum, a Black Writers Museum. And these are museums, the Lest We Forget Museum, mm-hmm. that deals with the enslavement, you know, Torresdale. They made a collection of the artifacts, mm-hmm. that were actually involved in the slave system of trying to cultivate this here forced labor that we should get repaid for in the name of reparations. They've collected this information. They're willing to participate, and we're going to have a day where people in the community can come and become aware of these cultural institutions that they should be able to support, which will give us the information and the history, help educate us to what our place is, and also help us be creative in our thinking of what we should do. That wasn't done before. So now you have a museum, you have a library, and you have cultural institutions that are coming together for the benefit of the community in large to become aware of where they should be able to take their children, their grandchildren, themselves, and other family members and friends. I want to call that hopefully it's not an ego statement. I want to call that an achievement in some small way to the development of our cultural infrastructure. And that's what we're working on. We ain't there yet, but we're working on it, and we're getting yeses. And that's what I'm excited about. And I'm hoping that's something that to the Time for Awakening audience, they can see there's something that they can duplicate in the area there that they are. That's a job that they can take on if they have that interest. And as one of the docent members say, that passion. Because in order to take on these jobs, you got to have passion. You got to have that consciousness of victory. You got to believe that African people in the shores of North America can actually win this this unnecessary but very possible fight for our own liberation. And yeah. That's, I just wanted to throw that out there. Hopefully I wasn't too long for you.
No, and you know, we have to develop a new mindset in dealing with this too, because it's a lot of times, and in fact, the overwhelming majority of times, there's no money involved in this. It's just a care for our people and a care for the community. You look at the formation of this society that we live under. A lot of this country's founding fathers, or European so-called founding fathers, it wasn't any money in it for them when they were forming this country. Or sure, it was money in it for their personal, because they had us as the capital. But I'm talking about the formations of what we see now. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to set up this white supremacist society, and they did it with no money involved in doing it. If you look right. at the formations, I'm talking about the formations, Richard, of right. a lot of these things. They had a vision that they were going to make money, and we know that. But mm-hmm. the formations of it, and we got to look at the situation the same way. We don't control a lot of these finances of a lot of things. Some of the things we do have some type of control over, especially when you're talking about dealing in the neighborhoods We do have control of, and we got to start having a mindset to redirect some of these funds to what we are supposed to utilize them for. That's just a mission that we have to take on. you look at some of my icons, and, you know, Fred Hampton Jr. is be joining us in the 8 o'clock hour. And look at his dad. Look at Malcolm. Look at Dr. King. A lot of these, it wasn't no money in it for these men. These men put their life on the line, lost their life, and then when they lost their life, they didn't even have money to bury them. Ossie Davis and them had to get together and put money together for Malcolm's funeral. Belafonte and some other ones put together for Dr. King's funeral. Those men didn't even have funds to even bury themselves. Or you know what I'm saying, Richard?
Oh yeah, and that's so real. It is so real, and I see that. You know, in my short time, you know, one of the elders that I respect so well, and I, well, a couple of them, but they didn't have a lot. I mean, the work that they did, the number of years, and the influence they had, it wasn't a paycheck. They had to work, and they worked at night putting together study groups, the Pan-African Federation Organization, which is called, you know, the acronym of PAFO, and which came out with the Journey of the Songhai People, which, you know, came out that, you know, it influenced so many people in our area, and Ed Robinson and Calvin Robinson and Dr. Battles, Brother Battles, and all of them were men that they didn't get paid for doing that work. You know, it's, you know, what you said is so real, you know, and we have, that's why I latched on what the DOSA member said about, it has to be about passion for our people. That's the, you know, that's where the exchange, but at the same time, I agree with you, Elliot, we have to utilize this to create an economy. Because to me, I don't know why we don't think that we can create an economy around telling our historical narrative. I mean, yeah, as you
other
said,
people do it all the time.
They go downtown all the time.
Exactly.
They bust them in from all over the country, all over the world. I mean, different people come in to hear how these people, you know, and they don't tell about the enslavement unless one of us is there. But they have the glory of them being able to put together this democracy. That's just one example. They do it in everything, the music or whatever. We don't have a story that we celebrate that people want to hear when we know that the music and even the civil rights movement, all these things have, you know, reverberated around the world for people who were oppressed and under domination, that people would want to come and exchange their resource, their labor and their time in dollars and cents with us to hear how we tell that story.
You know, I'm glad that you talk about the narratives of these things, because you had a leader of this country that just passed away. Mm. And I'm listening to a terrestrial program on Saturday, and it was on a black station, and the host was giving condolences to George Bush. Now, I'm not one, and this is me personally, to get on here and say derogatory things in reference to white folks. Oh, he's a this, he's a cracker, he's a that, this. That's not me. I don't do that necessarily. But I'm telling the truth about people, and being that our people are not stupid, they ought to be able to see the narrative, see what's going on, search for information, and then they can make their own intelligent assessments about these people that they're lauding praises on. I'm listening to the host laud praises on this guy when all they got to do is just look. You know, it was a period of there for almost 250, maybe 300 years where they made sure that you didn't do no reading.
Mm-hmm.
And they slaughtered you, cut your hands off, poke your eyes out if they caught you reading a book. But now, you don't even necessarily have to read a book. With the social media and things like that where it almost read for you, it don't take much to search for information. So it's no excuse for for some of our people to come on airwaves. I'm not talking about in private conversations. You look foolish when you do it in a private conversation, whether it's in a beauty salon, a barber shop, or wherever. You look foolish when you make a dumb statement like that. But when you're on the airwaves and make stupid statements in regards to these people that we're talking about, then you know, it's a passage in the Bible that says if a man wants to be ignorant, let him be ignorant. So, you know, it's no excuse now. But before, I just want to read a couple of these articles. The Time of Awakening listening audience is intelligent, and they already realize it. But I just want to read a couple of articles in reference to this. And that way we don't have to go down the road of name calling with these people. Let their works speak for them. Before I do that, I want to play a clip by John Henry Clark. I think a lot of these things are always apropos on the program in reference to our situation here and things we need to do to not only understand our situation, but to move forward. Let me play this. I love this here. It's longer, but I'm just going to play maybe about a minute and 40 seconds of it if I can pull it up.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusion about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
I just wanted to play that, Richard, because mm-hmm. it gives a perspective of what we're dealing with. And the three major religions that he's talking about is Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. He laid it out there. So, you know, people can hear it. They can do whatever they want, follow whoever they want, follow principles of whatever they want. But at least you know what you're dealing with and make an intelligent assessment of what we're dealing with and what we're going to have to do to move forward. Because that's why a lot of the times when you talk about these issues, it always boils down to animosity and divisiveness in the black community, because black folks jump to defend these faiths. A lot of times, these white folks, they don't care. They'll table a lot of those things. They table it. They know how to table that stuff. That's why some of these Anglos work with Jews and everybody else, especially when it comes to you. They table all those religious ideologies that they know that they brought here to control the minds of our people. They table it. But we can't seem sometimes to be able to table these things and put them in the proper perspective. But I just wanted to play that clip by John Henry Clark. Go ahead, Richard.
If I can, just because in that, it reminds me of when Trump was just at NATO, and he's telling them while they're there that they got to pay. That you know, America is telling them, y'all gonna pay for y'all security now, right? But at the end of that meeting. And I hope one of the listening audience can confirm, you know, because sometimes I hear these things and I'm not sure, but I try to go back and find it. Because he says, look, these to the European countries, you know, in spite of our differences, in spite of I'm saying that you got to pay, we got a global world to control. And to me, if that ain't speaking to what you just said, I don't know that these guys, you know, as and people can call them whatever you want. I mean, there's 45, but amongst them guys, they recognize that that, as Dr. Clark said, the European domination of the world is their primary objective. I just wanted to throw that in.
Oh, man. Richard, let me read. I just want to read a couple of these paragraphs here from some of these published reports. This is from the Intercept from yesterday, 12/1/18. It's called The Ignored Legacy of George H.W. Bush, War Crimes, Racism, and Obstruction of Justice. And I'm going to just skip down in some of the articles because if somebody cared to read it, they can pull it up. It's by an author, Mehdi Hassan, and he wrote it in The Intercept. It talks about several things in this particular article. One, it says he ran a racist election campaign. The name of Willie Horton should forever be associated with Bush's 1988 presidential bid. Horton, who was serving a life sentence for murder in Massachusetts, where Bush's Democratic opponent, Michael Dukakis, was governor, had fled a weekend furlough program and raped a Maryland woman. The notorious television ad called The Weekend Passes. Hold on 1 second. All right. Called Weekend Passes, released by a political action committee with ties to the Bush campaign, made it clear to the viewers that Horton was a black man and his victim was white. Bush's campaign director, Lee Atwater, bragged, "By the time we're finished, they're going to wonder whether Willie Horton is Dukakis' running mate." Bush himself was quick to dismiss accusations of racism as absolutely ridiculous. Yet it was clear at the time, even to the right-wing Republican operatives such as Roger Stone, now a close ally of Trump, that the ad had crossed the line. "You and George Bush will wear that to your grave," Stone complained to Atwater. "It's racist, and you're going to regret it." Stone was right about Atwater, who on his deathbed apologized for using Willie Horton, the Willie Horton ad, but Bush never did. Now, that was dealing with Horton. Let me skip down to something else here. 13 years before George Bush lied about the weapons of mass destruction to justify his invasion and occupation of Iraq, his father made his own set of false statements to justify the aerial bombardment of that same country. The first Gulf War was an investigation by journalists Joshua Holland concluded was a solid mountain of war propaganda. From the start, Bush told the American public that Iraq had invaded Kuwait without provocation or warning. What he omitted to mention was that the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, April Gillespie, had given effective green light to Saddam Hussein, telling him in July 1990, a week before the invasion, "We have no opinion on Arab-Arab conflicts, like your border disagreement with Kuwait." Under George Bush Sr., the U.S. dropped a whopping 88,500 tons of bombs on Iraq and Iraq-occupied Kuwait, many of which resulted in horrific civilian casualties. In 1991, for example, the U.S. airstrike on an air raid shelter in Amira neighborhood of Baghdad killed at least 500 Iraqi civilians, according to Human Rights Watch. The Pentagon knew of the Amira facility and had been used as a civilian defense shelter during the Iran-Iraq war, and yet attacked it without warning. It concluded HRW a serious violation of the laws of war. He talked about the Willie Horton ad. He talked about Iraq and the not only the whole thing being fabricated, but the killing of civilians. In 1986, the Associated Press reported an FBI probe on contra cocaine trafficking. According to the report, 12 Americans, Nicaraguans and Cuban Americans, backers interviewed by the Associated Press said that they had been questioned over the past several months about contra cocaine trafficking by the FBI. In interviews, some covering several days and being concluded in Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Colorado, California, several of the contra backers told AP firsthand knowledge of cocaine trafficking. On April 17, 1986, Reagan administration released a three-page report stating that there was some contra cocaine connection in 1984 and 85, and that these connections occurred at one time when the rebels were particularly hard-pressed for financial support. Because the aid from the United States had been cut off, the report stated, "We have evidence of limited number of incidents in which drug trafficking had been tied to the established connections with Nicaraguan resistance groups, and that the drug activity took place without the authorization of resistant leaders." In 1986, John Kerry and Senator Chris Dodd proposed a series of hearings at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee regarding charges of contra involvement, drug trafficking, and the hearings concluded by Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana and Republican chairman of the committee. The report released in April 13, 1989, found that the contra links to the United States involvement in involvement in narcotics trafficking by individuals associated with the contra movement, participation of narcotics traffickers in contra supply operations through businesses, relationships with contra organizations, provisions of assistance to contras by narcotics traffickers, including cash, weapons, planes, pilots, air supply services, and other materials on a voluntary basis by traffickers, payment to drug traffickers by the U.S. State Department of funds authorized by Congress for humanitarian assistance to contras, in some cases after the traffickers have been indicted by federal law enforcement agencies on drug charges, and others while traffickers were under active investigations by these same agencies. In August 18th and 20th of 1986, the San Jose Mercury published Dark Alliance series by Gary Webb. For the better part of a decade, the San Francisco Bay Area drug ring sold tons of cocaine to Crips, Bloods, and street gangs in Los Angeles, funneled millions of drug profits to Latino American guerrilla army organizations run by U.S. Central Intelligence agencies, opened the first pipeline between Colombia's cocaine cartels and black neighborhoods. The cocaine that flooded helped spark a crack explosion in urban America. So these are some of the things. You know, when we got hosts that are on black stations get up there and talk stupid about some of these people, they just need to put the facts out there. Then you can use your mind to see whether these people are worthy of praise or worthy of condemnation. I don't have to get on here and say, it's a crack. I don't do that. But if you put the facts out there, an intelligent individual can make an assessment of these people. This man committed war crimes on other shores and committed crimes against humanity here, where millions of black folks' lives were totally destroyed by this stuff going on. And we're still reeling from the effects of it. But next week, you're going to see Bill Clinton, who was the first black president, a business partner of George Bush, at his funeral. You're going to see Obama, who loved both Bush and his son, at his funeral. Our people need to wake up in regards to some of these people and just let the facts speak for themselves. We don't have to get on here calling names and this and that. You're dirty, this, you crack, you this and that. Listen, I don't do that. The audience can do whatever they want. All you got to do is let the facts speak for themselves.
Come up with the conclusion.
And let me just do this, just to put a little icing on that cake. Because after all of this stuff had come out after some whites start turning on one another because the news had broke that the CIA and others, who George Bush was the head of at that time, he later became president, the CIA and all of them had been involved in this after the heat got on by these reporters that broke these stories. And some of the guys supposedly had jail time or went to jail. This was the conclusion of it. Put a little icing on that cake. In December 4th, 1992, pardons were issued by then President George Bush. And let me just read some of the names and the charges that were involved and the people that were prosecuted. Robert McFarlane, 1988, he was convicted in the Iran-Contra affair. He was pardoned. Caspar Weinberger, 1988, several counts of perjury in reference to the Iran-Contra affair, pardoned. Elliot Abrams, two counts of unlawful withholding information in the Iran-Contra affair, pardoned. Diane Claridge, 1991, seven counts of perjury and false statements in the Iran-Contra affair, pardoned. Alan Fears, 1991, two misdemeanor counts of withholding information to Congress in the Iran-Contra affair. George Clare, 10 counts of perjury and false statements and obstruction. Two counts of felony charges and false statements before Congress. All of these people in the Iran-Contra affair pardoned by George W. Bush. So, you know, let the facts be. I don't want facts to get in the way. So any of them hosts on black talk stations that talk stupid, just spend some time. Educate yourself on the with it. And believe me, some of the people that you'll see, and I named them, they're all aware of what I'm talking about. It was as stated then when Clinton was governor over there in Arkansas that they had secret bases where the drugs was coming in by his business partner, his later business partner, George W. Bush. So, you know, don't let the facts cloud your judgment. Let me get a couple calls in because we're supposed to transition to have the chairman join us in the 8 o'clock hour. But let me get a couple calls in before we go. Let's go to 267. 267? 267?
Hey, good evening, Elliot. Yeah, good evening, Elliot. And good evening, Richard. Ralph, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
All right. Hey, I'm glad you covered that because that's exactly why I called in when I heard you talking about them dropping bombs on Iraq and all that. That didn't really matter to me because those same people that they were dropping bombs on will come over here and embrace them and step on us.
Mm-hmm.
Like John Henry Clark said, we have no friends. Hold on. I'm sorry. And what I wanted to also say, you know, you were talking about our scholars. And I think we need to embrace another name. I heard Brother Jay talk about him sometime. Heard Brother Oshie talk about some of his publications, so I bought a couple. Then I talked on the phone to one of my friends down in D.C., and he told me, like, they were giving a lecture. And I finally had a chance to meet their brother. I can't pronounce his first name, Milana Baruch. And let me tell you something. We need to embrace that brother. If there's a spirit that came back of Brother Amos Wilson or John Henry Clark, that brother has it. He was straight, no chaser, like Brother Oshie always says. He made everything real plain and simple. And I think our people should be aware that there's a powerful brother in their midst that they really need to embrace and listen to. And the brother's not out there on the circuit doing all this stuff, like bent on ego and a whole bunch. This brother's doing a quiet work, which really needs to be done. And I agree, man, that this is one of the first people that I've sit there, I actually listened to, and actually agree with about 105% of what he was talking about. So I think we really need to embrace that brother. Also, You know, you talked about those people, probably the morning program you're talking about. And I expected that, man. That's the kind of stuff that keeps the people that really want something, that keeps their mentality crippled. And I heard an interesting proverb right from the Bible, man, that makes a lot of sense. Because if you hear these people on that station, they just run their mouth. And they even have the nerve to even mention John Henry Clark about, you know, I only debate my equals, all others I teach, which is full of ego. But, you know, the book, that book you just talked about, Elliot, it says, when a fool keepeth his peace, you know, when a fool keepeth peace, he's observed to be wise. And, you know, the reason why he's observed to be wise, he's keeping his mouth shut so he can learn, not just try to beat up on people that don't know or whatever. So when I hear that arrogance, man, coming from out of our people about, I only debate my equals, you're not even an equal once you take that kind of mentality. We got to stop that foolishness. We got to check our egos at the door. We have to check, you know, it's so much work we need to do. And I got to be careful because some brothers, they say when I go off on these rants that I'm demonizing our people. No, there is some work that needs to be done for each and every one of us. When I look in the mirror, I said, I haven't arrived, but I know for a fact I need some work because I'm under the same system you, Richard, and everybody else is. So I cannot look down on the next man. If anything, if I'm looking down on him, I need to pick him up and treat him as an equal because he is an equal. We're all victims in this struggle. So, you know, I just had to call in and mention that we really need to embrace that, brother. I didn't see any of that ego. I didn't see any of that arrogance. I didn't see none of that nonsense, man. That was a very wise brother. I bought a bunch of his publications. I'm going to start doing some reading because I need help. We all need help under this system, man. And I almost got in one of those funks that he said he was in for 15 years where he just tried to help the people and they didn't want it. And he got in that funk where, is this really worth it? And I, you know, we all get in those funks sometimes if we're really honest with one another. So, you know, I just got to I just wanted to mention that we need to embrace that brother, man. That brother's powerful. He's strong. And I wish I knew about, I have heard of him, but this is the first time I ever met him. First time I met him personally. And just wanted to call in and let you and the listeners know that. All right.
Yeah, you'll hear him on in the future. We've been trying to kind of coordinate schedules. I had him about a month ago, but then he had gotten sick, had a severe flu, and then he recovered. But I just hadn't reached out to him. But you'll hear him eventually, probably within the next month or two.
And for a little bit of good news also, brothers, I'm going to let y'all know. Four young men in their 20s reached out to me, and I had a chance to sit down with them in the library, because they're all like trying to become the, you know, electricians. And man, it was such an honor seeing those young brothers put such faith in me and my experience and say, no, we're here to learn from you. And they were, I mean, you don't know what that done to me, man, just having young, because that's what I want to do. That's what my passion is at. I want to train our young men how to make a living. Because like you said, money ain't everything, but we all need to feed our families. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, that was a beautiful thing that occurred yesterday with me and those brothers, man. And they said they want to do this more often. And I told them, bring more so we can get some things together, establish our own union, do some things that we need to do for self. So, you know, I just had to call in and share some good news, man. There is some hope. You know what I mean? So I just had to call in and let you guys know that. And I'm glad that you mentioned Willie Horton and that crack epidemic, because that man was the head of the CIA at that time. Thanks. So, you know, we need to, and he wasn't trying to help free Wakanda.
You know what I mean? So, you know, we need to get some things in perspective here. So I'm going to let you guys go. I know your time is limited, man. So
talk
just wanted to call in and give you an update. All right, brother.
Talk to you soon.
Congratulations.
All right, thank you.
Let's go to 215. 215? 215?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how you doing, bro?
Hey, bro. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. I just call, you know, talk about that devil may God unrest his racist soul, that bastard. I'm looking, listening at these Negroes on the other station, and some call in, they want to get their condolences, like Dwight Evans call in, and they want to give their condolences. And he forgot what he did, this devil did to us, man. He gave us that Clarence Thomas in the Supreme Court. And you up against that nonsense by you being a congressperson, dealing with that whole atmosphere down there as a result of him. And then look at the stuff. He was in Dallas, Texas, the day Kennedy was killed. He was overseeing Kennedy's assassination. You know, so, I mean, he got blood on his hands, man. And for them to, you know, just to take this guy up like he's Mother Teresa's twin brother or some nonsense, man. And, you know, it's ridiculous. I don't know what it's going to take for us to wake up, man. Maybe we'll wake up when we're in the gas oven somewhere. We might wake up then and say that those people came before was right and warned us about this stinking devil here in America. You know, so I really couldn't tell you, brother.
Hey, listen to Mo. Thank you for your opinions, man. And don't be a stranger, brother.
No, definitely. Brother Germantown Joe gave me the number, man. So I had to call him, man. Oh, one more thing about them Xerox Jews over there, too. And Mark Lamont Hill. See, what they need to do, they need to have a forum to make them people prove that they're Jews. Like that crack over there, Nazi Yahudi, that devil, the head of Israel now. He come out from Cheltenham. He didn't come out of the Holy Land. All of them came out of the caves of Europe, and they had no right to that area. You know, and the land, the whole question of land, ain't going to be solved until the Afro-Americans here in America is sitting at the table when it comes to talking about that land over there they call Israel, you know. So I'll hang up, you know, listen, brother.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation until Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. joins us. You can get involved too in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, we're going to hang around in open forum until the Chairman joins us. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
And leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. Young people, you can't feel that you're missing them. Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk. Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. Your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
We're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party, still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. never get free.
You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're transitioning to the second hour of the program. Brother Richard, it looks like our guest is on the line.
Yes.
Activist and organizer, chairman of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee and the Black Panther Cubs. It looks like the chairman has joined us. Chairman Fred.
Yes, sir, my brother. Honored to be with you.
How are you, sir?
How you doing there?
Right on. Good. Again, I'm honored, humbled to be online with you.
Chairman Fred, listen, it's a lot of different things I want to touch base with you on this evening. Got some calls on the line, too. I know they want to talk to you. But let's do a little reflection first, Chairman Fred. We're coming up on the 49th day or anniversary, if you want to use that term, of the murder of your father by this government conspiracy along with the police department in Chicago. Talk about reflection, and plus it's current things going on now in relation to your parents' house. I want you to talk about that and put it all in perspective of how you feel in reference to it and what's going on now.
Yes, indeed. Well, we literally, I think approximately less than 48 hours away from what is going to be the 49th year after the assassination of Chairman Fred Hampton, Defense Captain Mark Clark, which occurred December the 4th, 1969, at approximately 4:35 in the morning. So our energies are high and getting ready for what we refer to as IRD, International Revolutionary Day. And not only is our energy high these days that are recognized specifically, but within the oppressed community. The state's repression, you know, because extra intense. What this case, we tend to forget. They always remind us. They don't forget. In fact, where Chairman Fred is buried at in Hainesville, Louisiana, his tombstone is shot up annually by law enforcement to this day.
Wow.
I'm surprised. That's the first time I've heard that.
You can actually. In fact, you can actually Google tombstones, Chairman Fred Hampton's tombstone. And you can see the punch marks in the tombstone. In fact, some years back, one of my comrades, we had raised some struggles to. In fact, it was the niece of little Bobby Hutton. Bobby Hutton, who was assassinated April 6, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
His niece, some years back, she had raised the issue about maybe we should raise funds to get the tombstone resurfaced. I said no. I think it's important that the world see that even in death, this system, this government is not, has not forgotten. Like clockwork, they actually shoot it up. I think it's important that, that this, we reminded about this. In fact, it goes right into the, speaking on the significance of a campaign that we're dealing with right now,
okay.
Saving the home in which he grew up in, and many, the state, the system, they recognize the importance of buildings, symbolism, you name it. And we can look back at the days of Napoleon in regards to when they implemented the 21-gun salute by shooting the nose of the Sphinx in Egypt. As what they say, because it contained Negroid features, we see even in our art, the various artists, how record covers, how they would go back and change, lighten up the images. All these are war tactics. And I recall even the building, the actual building which Chairman Fred and the Pinkerton and Mark Clark were assassinated in, as well as the actual headquarters for the Black Panther Party, which is about a block and a half from the house that he was assassinated. And there's a wall that had an image of Chairman Fred, all within about a 3-day time period in the late 80s, were demolished. It was to wipe out any memory of that. And his tombstone, in places like Menard Penitentiary, where Chairman Fred Sr. was at 1969, and I was at 1999, they still have photographs of me as well as him in every gun tower right now. But if the prisoners get caught with a photograph of either one of us, they add 6 months to your sentence, isolation for 6 months. These are blatant examples of the system's position that we don't supposed to have any memory of our resistance, but they always remember. They keep a toll. They keep a a data bank, and that's why in so many instances they know our potential before we know our own potential. Late February, early March, we've been in the home in which Chairman Fred Hampton grew up in, right outside the west side of Chicago, Maywood, Illinois. And we've been battling to save that home. We, I mean battling in every which way. Uphill battle, you know, trying to raise funds. We've been over there in some cases without no water, no heat, you name it. And even I recall when we first got there, I just came from Oakland, California, and I was on the block in West Oakland where the Black Panther Party initially was organizing. And I was talking to the nephew of Minister Huey P. Newton, and we were talking about how the West Oakland in particular was flooded with dope. And I correlated to what happened on the west side of Chicago, a situation about 30 years ago where I came over to the location where Chairman Fred and Franklin Lamar Clark were assassinated there, and guys was pushing dope. And I remember talking to them about the significance of this site. And they said, the police never harassed them right there. And they said, we out of respect to the chairman, we're going to leave. Ironically, the same house he grew up in, we had to deal with some similar struggles. They literally tried to turn this to a crack house. You know what I'm saying? And these are tactics that need to be recognized in the correct political context. It's called salting the earth. Mm-hmm. Salting the earth. We talk about when conquerors or colonizers go through different places, not only do they do a hit, this system, imperialism, they look at, everything. I mean, they use rape, they use sexist war tactics. Not only did they kill us, the way that they kill us, the breaking process, go back and salt the earth so crops cannot grow. So you will be dependent upon the same oppressor, the same one that, that murdered our mothers and fathers, raped our mothers, in many cases, the men as well. And that you will be demoralized to the point that you have to go back and ask them for food rations. You know, you see situations with the indigenous community, native community, where they, the colonial troops would come through. And then in an ironic twist, you would see on the reservations that the native people would be forced to go ask them for corn. You know what I'm saying? The same ones who taught them how to grow corn. And same with our information. They deprive us, they rob us, and rape us and pillage us of our information, our history. And we are forced to go back to their schools, to ask them for this watered-down, sanitized version of our information. We're in a position right now that we are fighting to save the childhood home of Chairman Fred Hampton. And this one brother told me recently, this 70-year-old brother, he said, "Chairman, please," he said, "do not get rid of nothing." He said, "save the dishes." He said, "do you understand these are the dishes that Chairman Fred ate out of?" We have cases of children going to elementary school. You can literally see their walk is different now. They said, "we didn't know that Chairman Fred Hampton grew up here. We didn't know he went to this elementary school across the street." And it's not by happenstance. We've heard discussions about people telling us how right after Chairman Fred was assassinated, December the 4th, 1969, that they came through, the law enforcement, they came through, they pulled different people out their homes, different brothers who they've seen have potential, and said there would never be another Fred Hampton out here again. Never. The breaking process, similar to that during the era of chattel slavery, how they would, they would just go kill us. They would take us in front of the populace, the mass of the people, and take pregnant sisters and slit their stomachs to open and stomp the fetus to death to implement fear and terror for generations to come. It's not by happenstance that there are people that grew up, in Chicago that did not know or were afraid to speak about who Chairman Fred was. That's the short time that we've been there. We've been having our programs, our Triple C programs, Children, Community, and Cubs, done in the spirit of the Black Panther Party Free Breakfast Program. We've got, we've been feeding a countless number of children, people in general. We've had our school there. We have a museum that we officially opened August 30th, which would have been the 70th birthday of Chairman Fred, right there in the house. Again, situation without no heat, no water. We've been doing it, and the community has been coming through with dozens of eggs, boxes of garbage bags, cans of paint, resource, you name it. And we've had block parties. So we've been the bank was set to put the house up for auction. October 23rd, we got a reprieve, a continuance, but we still fighting. But during this fight, a lot of legitimate questions have been raised. People have been asking, how is it that on December the 4th, Colin Kaepernick can come to Chicago, have an afro, and this leather jacket, but donate millions of dollars to these other entities like Black Youth Project, other University of Chicago entities, but no resources, the actual words going on Chairman Freddie Black at the party. How is it that Lupe Fiasco can have an entire album with a song titled Chairman Fred's Speeches without, you know, saying no commitments to this work to save this house? How is it that University of Chicago can bring in members of the Black Panther Party from all over the world? How can they have an auction this last a week and a half ago, which we went and exposed, with Panther Party members selling paintings of Chairman Fred for $1,500, paintings of his speeches for $2,200, you know what I'm saying? And money going right back to the same institutions that has ripped us up, that have documented our history, but not a dime going to, you know what I'm saying, maintain the legacy of Chairman Fred and the house he grew up in. These are questions that people are asking, you know what I'm saying? They've been flooding the Twitter.
You know
all these so-called conscious artists asking, where do you stand on the fight to save the Hampton House?
Let me mention this, Chairman, being that you mentioned that, the discussion is coming up. In 1990, it was concluded that the government admitted what they consider wrongdoing in the murder of your father and yeah. Mark Clark. In 1990, yeah. they admitted it. In 2004, yeah. the Chicago City Council passed a resolution about the day being commemorated in memory of your father. Now, where does the Black elected officials in the area stand in reference to this? Because it's already the government of this country has already admitted the murder of your father. So they admitted their hands is full of blood. And then the city admitted wrongdoing because their police department was involved. So if you got two entities, government entities admitting wrongdoing, isn't it some obligation through the government and these representatives of the Black community that's in government to fight in reference to this?
You would think so. You would think so. And the Maywood is a small village right outside the west side of Chicago.
Okay.
And now some of the different local officials out there, Bellwood, Broadview, even some of the local congressmen, they came out in support. You know, so they came out and pushed it. But ironically, Chicago, which is good, I mean that's what, because Chairman Fred left, you know, it's like a 10 minute crossing over the street, you know, 10 minute difference between Maywood and Chicago.
Okay.
The heart of it's organizing. You say, wait a minute, these are people that benefited. I mean, directly from the sacrifices for the contributions of people like Chairman Fred, Harold Washington, the mayor of Chicago, he said himself that in regards to Bobby Russ getting the alderman position, it was due to his relationship with Chairman Fred and Black Panther Party. These are so many people who talk about in a cliche, it's an abstract type of way about, yes, I like the Black Panther Party, I remember Fred Hampton. So, however, when it comes down to any concrete support to the war chest or to support those who will fight to maintain the legacy, you talking about MIA in such a way. You know what I'm saying? And these are contradictions that the people, again, they are asking, that many people do the foregone conclusion. Say, wait a minute, as you just pointed out, that the government, I mean, this is a case where the Chicago police came in their uniforms. You know what I'm saying? This is a case where there's no doubt about it. I mean, he was assassinated. This is a case where after his body was exhumed, they found enough Seconal, enough knockout drug that was placed inside his Kool-Aid the night prior by agent, enough Seconal to technically knock a horse out. You know what I'm saying? But case after case, these elected officials in Chicago, case after case, these different entertainers and artists, they become Black when it's beneficial. They play Panther when it's profitable. And they claim to have a connection with the Cubs when it's comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Well, anytime our legacy, as well as our people, is treated like political mistresses to these individuals. You know what I'm saying? They come up, you know, they wait till you become a safe subject. It's like the representative of Wheaties cereal said. They said, why do you have Muhammad Ali on a Wheaties box in late 80s? And the representative of Wheaties said, we put him on there now because he's safe. These individuals, these entertainers, these politicians, their position is to wait to become a safe subject. You know what I'm saying? To speak about Chairman Fred. But the deal is, the system with the murders of Jameel Robinson, you know, Dalton, the murders of Rakia Boyd, Ronnie Man Johnson, Oscar Grant, Michael Walker, Mike Brown, they constantly remind us, you know what I'm saying, that this that this still remains to be a hot subject. They still, police terrorism is still alive in effect. The police still serve the same purpose in our community they served in 1969. That is what Minister UAP News assessed as an occupying army on our people. And you, any other community, any other respective nationality, recognize the importance of defense. I'm saying, wait a minute, don't we have, you know, say even if even people have the resource, say, well, I'm not going to say this. They say, wait, we have some individuals, we have an organization. Just talking about just even going to make sure that we remember those that stood up. How can we fund that? How can we support that? Any other community, that's the first line. Even street organizations, these are my gang members. Even street organizations say, wait a minute, make sure our defense is secure.
Mm-hmm. You know, before we you leave us this evening, Chairman Fred, I want you to give out any information with our listening audience can donate, if it's a GoFundMe or if it's other things. I want you to give that out.
Yes, sir.
Before we go to end, I get Brother Richard involved. Anything that you can let our listening audience know in reference to, because I see in published reports of officers that had colluded with what's that guy, Van Dyke, that killed, yeah, Laquan McDonald. They're supposed to be coming up on trial. He's been convicted. It's up in the air how much time he's going to serve, in my opinion.
Yes.
And then the young man that was security guard there that was murdered, when police get on the scene, they immediately open fire. Give us, listening audience, some background on some of the things that you know, being at your involvement in the community up here, Chairman.
The first case you mentioned, Laquan McDonald, who was shot 16 times by Chicago police officer James Van Dyke. As we speak, James Van Dyke, who was convicted, who had to be sentenced, who was locked up, but it should be noted about, you actually go look at the GoFundMe fund, the amount of resources and money that. It's ironic that what I'm saying is right after my last comment. The amount of resources that the white community, many Negroes with money, are investing and sending, they're making sure that they're paying, and they're saying they're supporting their troops, they're supporting their army that, you know, that's occupying the community. Several GoFundMe's, I'm talking about, how they're reaching out to them. It should be also noted, aside from James Van Dyke, what was exposed, and in fact, can be found maybe in the archives of Chicago Tribune, the letters, the email correspondence between Mayor Rahm Emanuel and several of the state-sanctioned spokespersons. These are the individuals who the state raises up and say, okay, this who leads your protest, this who writes the script, this who tells you when to come into, as Malcolm X said, when to come into town and when to leave town. So these individuals, how Mayor Rahm Emanuel had even told which spokespersons, you know what I'm saying, what speeches to say, what colors to wear, what pictures of Laquan McDonald they can carry, who can speak first, who can not. So this is amongst other contradictions that have been exposed. The other police that have on trial, as we know that even with James Van Dyke, when he was convicted, he was not convicted of misconduct. He was not convicted of misconduct, and which is a statement. The police position is, they don't say what Minister UAP News laid out, that this is their job. This is the, you know, their occupying army. And so this is when they dispatched the U.S. Army to Somalia, to Africa, to Afghanistan, Philippines. You know what I'm saying? The deal is to carry the big stick. You know what I'm saying? To lay it down, and they may use other dynamics to come with the carrot. You know what I'm saying? Whether it be the peace corps, what have you. But the army's role is to implement the big stick. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the statement is saying in regards to this case. He's not guilty of misconduct, though he shot this young child 16 times. The other police who are on trial now, it's thus far been exposed how, I forgot the lady officer's name, how she made a comment, you know what I'm saying, and said that she lied. And her life has been threatened. All, you know what I'm saying? So this is exposing, this is the modus operandi. You know what I'm saying? And she wasn't trying to, like, you know, I mean, she just said, you know, as a matter of fact, maybe she hadn't been, you know, she missed the roll call meeting, or she might not have been indoctrinated, I'll be already clear, what the role of the police is, what they're designed to do. So if we see she's in fear. So, you know, because she's getting the education quicker. What they would do to a pig, either the pig, you know, the people ain't had a chance. You know what I'm saying? So these are the contradictions that are being exposed with, in regards to James, the case of Laquan McDonald. Jeremy Roberts, the young man who was gunned down in Robbins, Illinois. Well, again, these villages, you know, and they still are connected to Chicago.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, though you may hear different names like Robbins, Dalton, so on and so on, they still adhere, you know, to the Chicago machine politics. And he, Robbins, Illinois, is about, I think, 90% black people. You all, like a southern plantation, you know what I'm saying, with massive plantations up on the hill. So Midlothian is where the white folks say, that's right outside Robbins. And you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we heard about this in Ferguson, St. Louis, how the white people come through, you know, and they can get their capital about their tickets by going through the black community, issuing the tickets, and then with the census, when the money is allotted by the federal government for resources to come down for stores, businesses, what have you, it goes to the white community. So Midlothian is that white community, you know what I'm saying, in regards to Robbins. So Jeremy Robertson, who was doing this, who was working as a security guard at a club in Robbins, Illinois, was actually on duty. You know, sense of people said, "Well, we need to get a job." I believe, you know, he was actually at work, and if I'm correct, a registered voter, had education, all the things that people say that people should do. The Midlothian police, who got a notorious relationship, you know what I'm saying? And I'm using that term loosely, relationship, in regards to people of Robbins. Man, they gun them down. I don't have the actual police's name on me right now. They gun them down. This just happened in Robbins, Illinois. So, you know what I'm saying? So these are just some of the latest cases of police terrorism that's happening here, there, and everywhere.
Richard?
Yeah, Brother Chairman, tomorrow, Mamiya, I believe, will reported he will be in his hearing will be coming up, and also be at the hearing, which will be at for those who are close by at 1301 Filbert Street at 8:30. Yeah. They're asking for people to, you know, show up at the hearing. How do you think based off of what you're saying, we should look at this process going on in relationship to you know, Brother Mamiya?
If I can preface, we can point this out too, that Mumia's last court date was August 30th, the birthday of Chairman Fred Hampton. And then it's continuous now, is December 3rd, the day before the acknowledgement of Chairman Fred Hampton's assassination. Mumia Abu-Jamal, the former Deputy Minister of Information for the Philadelphia branch of the Black Panther Party, who was dispatched by then Captain Reggie Shell of the Black Panther Party to come to Chicago, you know what I'm saying, and bring back a report in regards to what happened, you know, what occurred December 4th, 1969, Chicago, Illinois. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who has been writing and documenting the attacks on a MOVE organization, attacking the community, you know, who has been addressing issues within, even while held captive. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who the state is attempting to kill directly or indirectly, whether it be through the actual death penalty or through chemical, biological warfare, tuberculosis, whatever the case may be. You know, the state is very Machiavellian, you know, in their ways of implementing death penalty. I'm pointing out those dates. I think it's important that we up to ante, that we start recognizing that, you'll see, again, as I mentioned earlier, many of us, they forget and not make the connection to significant dates and symbolisms. The state does not. The day I was sentenced to 18 years in the penitentiary was on Malcolm X's birthday. So these are strategic moves that the state do. So I want to put that background with it. Mumia Abu-Jamal has continuously came to see about us. He spoke about issues ranging from Standing Rock, North Dakota, to, you know, saying what's happening, you know, saying in hip hop arenas, to, you know, saying what's going on in the streets of Philadelphia, to regards the cases, the MOVE 9, you name it. We got a thing we call with the Black Panther Party Cubs. We call it the Octopus Tactic. We got to be at a lot of places at one time. So I think it's important. We want, you know, saying we we say not only do we have to walk and chew gum at the same time, because the state, they're not just hitting us in one direction. We have to be, you know, multifaceted and not responsive. So I think it's important that we keep the heat on the streets in Philadelphia. I think it's important that we flood the social media, that we hashtag the whole the position of free Mumi Abu Jamal, free them all, that we do not let one bit on our relentless demand. Not only that Mumia, we must say that we do not let the state take Mumia, take them out, but doing the same, but we got obviously, you know what I'm saying, we demand Mumia be returned back to the community, and we got to keep that pressure on, to keep that pressure on.
Great. So what is the status of the House, if you can, you know, kind of elaborate? You know, I know Elliot has said, you know, you can present how we can support, but what's the status in relationship to securing now what you've done there with the House?
After we appeared in a probate court, we're in a position now where the U.S. Bank has, you know what I'm saying, has let me know directly, the exact amount we have to, you know, provide. The water department has to give us, because this is an outstanding water bill, and there's rumored to be between 6,000 and 7,000. That's crazy. In fact, there was a piece on Maywood on the news recently about the highest water bills. You know, say in the county. I know the county, if not the country. So this is something that we're dealing with too. So once we get that, that gives us standing. They can we're supposed to get this number. We're supposed to get this exact number tomorrow for the water department. And once we get that, that's the U.S. Bank is able to tell me directly what we're looking at. And that number's ranging from 70,000 to 200,000, because there's different debates about who's the primary lender, second mortgage company. You know, all these different, right, you know, gangsters and banksters that, you know what I'm saying, they collide together, you know what I'm saying? So you got to figure out if you got to pay Al Capone or just Frank Diddy or, you know, Sam Giancana or U.S. Bank, you know, so we're working on these. That's what we had now. So I'll give you more clear later on this week. You know, so tomorrow we're supposed to get this note from the water company. After we move forward, we're getting this, we're trying to get this resolved ASAP, but we're not letting no grass grow up on our feet. We still over there every day organizing, you know what I'm saying, you know, with our programs.
Okay. Go ahead, Richard.
No. I was just looking at a picture where the Black Panthers mural has the SWAT sticker on it. And I was wondering, you know, is this, do you see it that it's a continuation of the police state sponsored defamation of the Panther, or are there other, you think there are other groups that want to continue this image? I mean, is it the government, or is there others that just want to continue to defame the image, especially because of the moment we're in?
Yes. The image in Los Angeles, the mural of the Black Panthers, on which the swastikas scrawled over the faces of the image, and the community was on it ASAP. And I think the brother Kim Ra, I believe his name, who, you know, saying he came in, who actually who's the artist with the mural, they came in, they get the swastikas off. But I wanted, our position is that it is, it's state-sponsored terrorism, and whether it's implemented directly, indirectly. Mm-hmm. It's similar to what we talk about, the different dynamics, these white nationalist groups, you know what I'm saying, whether we talk about the Aryan Brotherhood, Northside, Ku Klux Klan, what have you. You know what I'm saying? There's a green light given to them, you know what I'm saying, by the state, you know what I'm saying? It's encouraged, you know what I'm saying? Again, that it's not by happenstance that people feel they can just treat Black people like the Rodney Dangerfields of all races. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's a message, you know what I'm saying? I say that, I mean, like, no respect, you know what I'm saying? So whether it be directly, indirectly, it's the state. It's state-sponsored terrorism.
And do you see young people responding in the sense of recognizing that the intensity, I'm going to call it low-intensity, state-sponsored terrorism that's going on? Do you see young people responding as an understanding of that from what's around you?
It's ebbs and lows. It's highs and lows. It's highs and lows. It's, you know what I'm saying? In many cases, you have a reactionary response. People, you know, come to grips with certain things. And we're dealing with a a Machiavellian system. You know what I'm saying? They know the sidetrack of souls. They smell us come, you know, getting conscious. They, with the love of hip hop shows, they drop propaganda bombs on us. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They, you know what I'm saying? The different sports figures, you know what I'm saying? I mean, literally, the rebellions in Baltimore, they know, you know what I'm saying, which athletes to send out there, you know what I'm saying, in Baltimore, to, you know what I'm saying, to redirect the people. They know, certain questions are being raised in Ferguson. You know, they come through a murder. They assassinate, you know what I'm saying? The Dan Seals and some of the other people in Ferguson, yeah. we call Mike Brown, Mike Brown Town. They create these, they kind of wipe out our legitimate resistance, and they create these GMOs, these government-made organizations. Mm-hmm. So some authentic, real tomatoes and carrots, you know what I'm saying, are being coming out the ground. You know, some real vital vegetation is happening.
I like that GMO government-made organization. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yes. And so I tell our people, we engage in liberalism. We don't check for the fine print. You know what I'm saying? Because the deal is like those similar to like plastic surgery. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I tell the body parts don't have no wrinkles, no creases, none of that. You know what I'm saying? Like the tomatoes. You know what I'm saying? You go through the GMO tomatoes. You know what I'm saying? It's a presence. It's an artificial look to it. It's attractive. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have the scars and the bars of actual organizers. So a lot of these GMO organizations, they bring them up. You see them on the commercials, you know what I'm saying, with these Kaepernicks and the like, and the Beyonce. And you say, it looks real pretty. You know, they donated this. But when you open that tomato, you say, whoa, I don't see any seeds in there. I don't see any struggle in there. I don't see any red, no juices in it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? As opposed to, you know what I'm saying, with the Black Panther Party Cubs organization, they got blood, sweat, and tears in it. You know what I'm saying? History in it. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different dynamic. So a lot of times you want to go for that plastic dynamic, that artificial, again, that GMO.
Jim and Fred, let me ask you a question, because we talked about this on Friday's program, and it might be a difficult question. I think that we as a collective have to come up with a solution for this. But let me preface the question with this. We talked on Friday about this published report that came out on The Root about the St. Louis cops, I think it was three or four of them, that are supposedly in trouble for beating. Now, number one, they went out after that verdict on the killing of Anthony Lamar Smith, that Jason Shockley verdict. They went out to intentionally beat protesters. They had admitted that they did this. But they just severely beat up one of their own. It was a black cop that it was 22-year veteran of the force. He was out there as a plant. Now, he had a job to do out there. We don't know what the job was, whether it was to rat on other activists, whether it was to set fires or to commit vandalism and blame it on activists. But he had a job to do. Now, you mentioned earlier in the beginning of your conversation about the autopsy of your dad and chemicals was found in his system.
Yes.
That was put in his Kool-Aid. So it was, we getting a little interference that might be on your end, Jim.
Okay, you walk to a better space.
Yeah, you.
Okay.
You sound pretty good now. About the chemicals that was found in your dad's system, and it was administered through his Kool-Aid. So it was clear from what you're stating that somebody was involved, a plant that was involved. Yeah. How do you, Chairman, as an organizer, an active organizer of young black folks, what do you tell them in reference to being cautious of this? Because this man's tactics haven't changed.
No.
He sees movements. He know that he can't necessarily get in there because it'll be obvious, you know, a white dude showing up at some of these. So he gets people that look like us to get involved in these movements and become intricately involved to lay a wound against these organizations. What do you tell some of the young activists and organizers about this and how to watch for this?
You know, I'm continuously learning. I'm continuing.
And listen, I just stated, I know it's a difficult question because me personally, I think that we have to come up as a collective with a strategy mm-hmm. to deal with this. But I'm just asking mm-hmm. you as an activist, your opinion on it.
You know, well, off top, you know, we say the work is the best way of exposing who is who. The work is the best way, you know, because a lot of times people can sit in bubbles and, you know, they can do what Chairman Fred Hampton said, you know, intellectual masturbation. They can say a bunch of words and terms, but you never know. You know, Black Panther Party said theory and practice. And we had a way at that. That's, you know, you can find out who is who. People find out who they are. A lot of people come in, they're not even clear who they are, but through the work it exposes.
Okay.
You know, opposition, we relate to Chairman Fred of Black Panther Party said that, you're going to be the hardest working agent around. You're going to be calling the headquarters saying, listen, could you transfer me to some other organization? Because you know what I'm saying? Because these cats is crazy. These cats get us out here working 24 hours a day. You know what I'm saying? So we'll it work around here. So,
oh, so, okay. So you're saying that the work itself is going to expose
who the work is, itself.
Okay.
You know, some cats, and I'm going to tell you this. This is ironic we having this discussion. It's people that's been in other geographical locations. They say, listen, they done came to certain with agendas that they've been in certain locations with liberalism. Where, you know, it never came up. You never knew what it was. They never had to ask any questions. Give us a minute. We just gonna sit around, just throw a whole bunch of fancy words and terms out and. You know what I'm saying? This and that. You're going to get put to work.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? People have been exposed. You know what I'm saying? Some with nefarious intent, some, they have gained a respect. They say, man, them Black Panther Party clubs ain't playing. They just ain't sitting up there, you know, rah-rah and, you know, throwing on some suits and talking. They going to do some work that's going to expose some contradictions.
Okay. All right. Excellent. You know, I never heard it put like that, Richard. The work itself going to expose.
And it is enough work to be done. Okay. I mean, what you were saying as far as the community bringing them bags and whatever to help clean out the house, that's getting your hands, and you can't be pristine in doing that either.
No, they're going to get some Oscars, some Grammys, or something for faking it around us.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
My pleasure to talk with you, Brother Fred. You took me back to my dad growing up in the shop when the Jehovah's Witness and stuff come along and want to talk to him. He said, son, all you got to do is hand him something. I hand him a broom or something like that. They cut it short, brother. I love the way you talk. Look, let me ask you something, because you got a lot of tools out here, and I know it's hard. I like the way you say you kind of like... Grace Boggs, then by the time you put somebody through the real paces, they weed the stuff out. But I want to ask you, you can't even get people up in your area, like in a historical society or nothing. None of these people are being called out for not being able to help you.
Excellent question. You know what I'm saying? A class piece that, you know, so a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people, you know, so they've been holding on to it. These fixtures that have these different names and stuff that people, it's similar to like these organizations that have names with black in front of it. People take for granted. They got to be black. You know what I'm saying? You meet them, you say, whoa, it take a long time. It's like piercing that propaganda with the police doors that have, you know, we serve and protect. A lot of people still can't go past that propaganda. A lot of these organizations, these entities, institutions, they have, it's some white dude got, it's, you can go online, it's something called a Fred Hampton Institute. This white dude, you know what I'm saying, making big money, you know what I'm saying? And people were shocked. They were like, wait a minute, how does this dude, you know what I'm saying, get all, how does he have this, you know what I'm saying? It's things that people took for granted, and you know what I'm saying? It's like, and I tell you, we don't want to question stuff, because like, it's like the old, or the news said, we can't believe the audacity of the system, you know what I'm saying? These institutions call themselves the historical side. You're like, well, here's the opportunity. People couldn't believe they went to, it's on Facebook. We got the live footage. University of Chicago. They got actual, paintings. I mean, they show on films.
Okay.
Millions of dollars budget.
I don't want to cut you off. I'm trying to gather some information so I can see if I can help you, because I don't mind hitting these keyboards, man. I'm 65.
Man, look, right
I'm
on.
I want to ask you something else now. Yeah. Nobody from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, nobody from any high-tech black companies ever come to you and talk to you about protecting your dad's name and image?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll make a few. I'll see what I can do. I'm a nobody, but I don't mind agitating, instigating, and all that shit. They have to block me to get rid of me, and then I usually use a friend's account to go after them again. We got to get it together and start Twitter shaming these people out in the open.
Yes,
matter
sir.
Of fact,
yes, sir.
I just put it to you like this. When Dwayne Wade and his lady come out on Twitter, come talking about they were moved by the Parkland shootings, I went straight to them and asked them what the hell happened with Ferguson and Baltimore and St. Louis.
Come on with
it. So I don't mind getting in the face, brother. Like I tell everybody when I call in here, and these brothers will tell you, I figure as a 65-year-old black man, the most I got is 10 years left. If I don't do nothing but agitate and try to figure out how to leave something behind for my people, I'm good. Right, I appreciate your time, son.
Appreciate you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you, brother Otis.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, brother.
Let's go to 404. 404, are you there?
Hey. You hear me, Elliot?
Yes, sir.
Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. Peace and blessings, Terminal Fred. I love you, man.
Peace and blessings, right back at you.
Hey, look here. Look here, man. I guarantee dollars to donuts, that devil that just died the other day, George Bush, had something to do with your daddy getting killed, man.
Yes, no
doubt. I'm digging, trying to find out. I'm going to find out. Because, see, each one of them operations, they have a name, Operation This. When they killed JFK, it was called Operation 40, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the hit squad that killed Kennedy. When they killed Dr. King, it was Operation Spike, okay? Mm-hmm. Lantern Spike.
Yeah.
So I'm digging to try to find out what was the code name that operation to kill your daddy, man. Okay, I'm going to find out. Because, see, I'm reading the article now. What they talking about, it was a snitch. You familiar with the name William O'Neill?
Yeah, William O'Neill was that's who had, he had just done the interview on Eyes on the Prize, and about a week later or something, they claimed he supposed to commit suicide right down the street from the house that Chairman Fred grew up in, on the expressway. And so, in fact, it's ironic you're talking about this now, because just now at the Hampton House, we had a couple of situations where we're going to be putting this out on our Free of All radio show this upcoming Wednesday. We do every Wednesday. There's some people we had to put a security camera because there's been threats on our life since we've been at the house and some other dynamics. We got some footage of some people who try to take the cameras down, and there's rumor that they're going to be related to William O'Neill. So we're going to be putting that out in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It's Free of All radio this Wednesday.
Because by my research, he was the number one snitch, man. And your dad did not want him around. Okay? Yeah. That's how I be digging, Ellie. I'm like the black double agent, man. I be digging. I dig the dirt out of these devils, man. That's what I do. I call them out. I do research, man. Okay? And Ellie, you talking about how them Zionists doing this, all this crap? Okay? Read the protocols of Zionists. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's where them fake Jews, they telling their whole playbook out. Okay, just go to read the protocols of Zion. Okay? It's called the Protocol of the Zion Elders. Elders of Zion. And they got the whole plan on how they gonna hide their identity. It's out there. That's what I do. Okay? In terms of prayer, I love you, man. Hey, tell the story about how they using these old fake ass LGBT to be bastards now, man. What you told on my man Darren's show yesterday. How they using these fake LGBTs to hijack y'all on the Panthers.
Man, brother, hey, I'm going to get on it right now, but let me say this to you. I thank you. I need your support. You the information, Black Panther Party's information is raw material for new ideas. You know what I'm saying? So, brother, please, man, get on it and stay in contact with us. Now,
because I'm reading about how much money they spent on damn informers and agent provocateurs. To try to have y'all fighting against each other, man.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm reading. I study the enemy, man. That's what I do. That's how you do. You study him. And I'm going to tell Elliot and all that. The way to defeat the enemy, the way to defeat their ass whatever benefit the oppressor, whatever they like benefit, do the opposite, man. Okay, yeah. That's how we. I tried that shit at work, man. Okay, I did the opposite of what they wanted everybody to do, and them fuckers got red, wanting to fire me, telling me if I don't want to work, go somewhere else, man. Because I do the opposite. That's how I get the ass. Always do the opposite. Whatever benefit the enemy, do the opposite. Yeah. And one thing about your dad, about Mr. Fred, he brought people together, man. I saw a video on him where he had Puerto Ricans, white, Chinese, black, all up in the room talking. Yeah. And they didn't dig that shit. The enemy don't like that, man.
Dig that.
So we got them, man. They tie them up, man. I'm going to send you something on PayPal, man, in a few weeks, brother.
Man, give thanks, brother. Right on.
Yes, sir. You know, I've been listening to you all the time, man. You know, free them all. I got your back like 100 proof and a bulletproof. And your front like a bulletproof vest.
You're right. So I'm talking about. Yes, sir.
Thank you for your call, brother.
I love y'all.
Free them all.
Thanks for your call.
Yes, sir. Are we still there?
Uh-huh.
Okay, this phone might die, but I'm going to call right back from a 773 number. But I was before. He's also coming in regards to the event the University of Chicago had convened at the Stony Island Arts Bank Center. People can Google that and look at the type in Theaster Gates, who's over the Stony Island Arts Bank. Tracy Matthews, who race and politics department at the University of Chicago. These are some of the people, the benefactors, who are trying to hijack the legacy of the Black Panther Party. They have brought people all over the country, and people say, well, how can they have all these millions of dollars? And Chairman Fred's home, we about to lose that. And his wife, his widow, you know, said she who covered over Chairman Fred's body, you know, said not a dime dedicated to the December 4th committee or what have you. So it was also later exposed about the questionnaire that they had given people. Now, mind you, the Black Panther Party is not, you know, moving in the capacity. I mean, Black Panther Party was going to say, suffered a military defeat, ideologically won. It's not, it's not active right now. So why would they have a questionnaire asking members of the Black Panther Party now, is the Black Panther Party willing and able, ready to accept transgenderism? Well, how did this get started? How does this, and ask the individuals who were not even in a position then to, you know, put out a policy for the Black Panther Party. So you have to say, what individuals are coming to what's the agenda to rewrite this history? You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
This was exposed, and more and more countries are being exposed about, you know, the different the benefactors of not only the bankrolling of receiving the bankroll of the Black Panther Party, but again trying to run up the archives and legacy of their organization. If the call, I'm going to call you right back, my brother.
Yeah, Richard, you got a few more minutes. Okay, yeah,
I'm good.
Yeah, okay.
Matter of fact, I'm gonna call you right now. I'll call you right now.
Go ahead. We'll get a call in while you switching over.
All right, this is me right here. Yo, I'm coming in.
Go ahead. Let's go to 267.
Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Brother Richard, I'm gonna call back because I want to talk to him.
Well, no, you all right. Chairman Fred, you on? Chairman Fred?
He sounded off. So I'm going to call back.
No,
when he's on.
You all right? Well, okay. I'll put you back on hold till he gets on. Let's go to 215.
Yeah, Brother Elliot, how you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Rich, how y'all doing?
Oh, man.
Good show tonight. Hey, Brother Tim and Otis. Good show, man. You know, man, I don't know where to begin. First, Elliot, I'm glad you got Brother Fred Hampton on because he lifted my spirits tonight, man, because I'm going to tell you, Elliot and Richard, I've been depressed the last couple of days, Elliot. Seriously. I'm not joking. When I heard that the former president died, I've been in a deep depression. I have. I've been really, I didn't know what to do with myself. My world been really black and blue, man, because that really hurt me to hear about Bush had made transition, man. I mean,
yeah, I know you do. Wait a minute, Chairman Fred, you with us?
Yes, sir.
Good. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Brother Chairman Fred, how you doing, my brother?
I'm all right, my brother. How you?
I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah. I was just telling, joking with Ellie and Richard. I said since Bush kicked the bucket the other day, I've been kind of depressed. You know what I mean? So I that's why I'm glad you lifted my spirits. And I'm just being a little sarcastic. But anyway, Brother Fred, it's honored to talk to you, man. You know, right here in Philadelphia, when you was talking to Brother Ellen Richard just now about that white guy in Chicago that kind of like hijacking your father's legacy, the historical society you mentioned. But right here in Philadelphia, the same thing happened with Dr. King. You got this white Jew boy every year in Philadelphia. He has this thing called the MLK Day of Service. Now, check this out. Now, this white boy, he gets paid big money to put this event on every week, every year in Philadelphia.
Millions of dollars. Children.
I'm sorry, what you say, Elliot?
Millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars, exactly. And the thing is, Karen Hampton, you got black children that can use a nice stipend because these are black children in the urban areas. They can use any kind of money they can get for their, you know, whether for to help their mom or dad out. He had these black children every year, you know, cleaning out schools, painting sidewalks, cleaning out playgrounds, sweeping streets, all that kind of stuff. And all these children get, Brother Fred, is just a T-shirt and a sandwich or something like that. And here this Jew getting, like Elliot said, he making millions of dollars. He makes every year off of this. And our poor lack of black leadership, or misleadership, if you will, they sit back and let this happen, man. Where he is hot, took Dr. King's legacy and making millions off of it, while poor black people get not a damn thing out of it. I mean, it's outrageous. That's why I feel you, what you're saying, what you're going through in Chicago, because it's a shame that they got, again, black people sit back and let your father's legacy be hijacked like that, man. We got to put an end to this nonsense. This kind of stuff, bro. It's painful, yeah. and it's disgraceful, you know?
It is, brother. It hurts. And, you know, this so-called Fred Hampton Institute, he's not based in Chicago, but he's online somewhere.
Okay.
I'm hearing you. I'm with you 100%, bro.
I appreciate it, Brother Frick, because you got my support, man.
Man,
you got my support. I love your father, man, Brother Mark Clark, and may God bless them brothers rest in peace, man. But you know, they may not be here physically, but their legacy and their spirit gonna live on. It lives through you, it lives through me, through Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, Brother Otis. Their spirits and legacy lives through. We never gonna let them die. When we say their name, they still alive, and that's the bottom line. We will defeat white supremacy, and like Brother West called a minute ago, these Zionists. Because at the end of the day, it's all about white supremacy, whether it be white so-called white fake Jews, whatever. And that book that Brother West was telling you, like, read that book, Protocol of Zion or whatever. That's a deep book. I read that book several years ago. It exposes these racist fake Jews for just who they are. They, at the end of the day, they're all about maintaining white supremacy and white domination of people of color around the world. And like I said, for black people, Brother Chairman, for them to get on any kind of terrestrial radio and give homage and praise to a devil like George Bush and stuff, it's just going to show you that the self-hating in these niggas. Any black person that will praise that devil and stuff is out of their damn mind. That devil was a hater of black people. He had no love for black people. So for you to get up there and praise him and give him some sympathy, my only thing about George Bush is it's a shame he didn't kick the bucket years ago. It's a shame he lived to be 90-something years old, no good bastard. But it just goes to show you just the ignorance of some of our people, man. We love our open enemy, man. We love the white man because he gives us nothing. And that's what it comes down to, bro. I can't make it no more plainer than that, you know? But anyway, thanks for your time, Brother Elliot. And you keep doing what you're doing, Fred, Brother Hampton. Keep fighting the struggle. The struggle continues, brother. And if Elliot get out a website or number, if I can make some kind of donation to you up there and stuff, I'll be more than happy to. If Elliot can put out an address or link or whatever over on air, I'll be listening. And I'll, you know, copy it down. Elliot can send me the link, and I'll be more than happy to make a contribution. Because one thing about me, Brother Chairman, I put my money where my mouth is at. Thanks, my brothers. Peace.
Thank you for your call, sir. Hold on. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hey, brother laid it out. Now, I hear you. I feel your pain. I relate to it. The people's pain reflects. You know what I'm saying? Because not only do they kill us, they come out to kill us again. They take our legacies. You know what I'm saying? And it was a movie they had on Nazi Germany. And they was showing the people after the Holocaust, and it was this German soldier, and they was talking to him, and he's talking about, you know, the different businesses he has, and so. And the reporter said, "It's kind of ironic that you benefited, you know what I'm saying, off of this." And I said, "Whoa!" I said, "In our community, it seems like it's the norm." You know what I'm saying? I mean, the people who, you know, man, just that like vampires, they constantly suck our blood, you know, constantly in our movements, our music. I mean, every dynamic. You know what I'm saying? I mean, from Elvis Presley, it'd be the ones who have a disdain for us, or who literally rip us off. You know what I'm saying? I'm like body snatchers, soul snatchers. You know what I'm saying? And man, just then we wonder
you know, why are we going through the financial struggles we're going through, so on and so forth, you know, it hurts.
Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, Brother Elliot.
How are you?
Yes, Brother Richard. Brother Richard?
No, he's there. Yes. Go ahead.
Brother Chairman, it's an honor, sir.
Yes, sir.
It's an honor. You know, all I see of your dad in film is wonderful. Yes. And you're a reflection of him, man. You know, I guess if it wasn't for him, you wouldn't be here. But every time I hear your voice, I think of him. But I'm going to tell you, sir, I was in Oakland in March of this year. And I went to the old Black Panther headquarters in Oakland. And it's now a Muslim bakery. Now, the connection with the Muslims in the Nation of Islam at that time and Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seals, I'm not saying they were enemies, but it wasn't like they were the greatest friends. And I'm saying to myself that it was a brotherhood, that was good, you know. My thing is that going inside there, you can see the old articles with Huey and Bobby and Catherine Cleaver and things of that nature and Eldridge. And I said to myself, though, those articles are preserved, the mere fact that that headquarters was there. The mere fact that that's going to be preserved for the Black Panther Party. But a Muslim got a hold of it, and at least he puts around the I would call Bakery Museum, the legacy of that. Now, the other thing about I was kind of upset with is that when Huey P. Newton was slain that on the pavement, there's no marker there. And the other part about it, like going around America, the neighborhood's gentrified. So whoever got the house probably didn't know the relevance of what was once there. So the other experience I had, when I went to the library in Oakland, I got many articles up, and as a matter of fact, I looked at the newspaper. Some of the Black Panthers are still doing things in the community, which is real good. And when you talk about not having our legacy, I felt that way when I was in Oakland, because people like talking about the history of the Black Panther Party, but they can't tell you where certain things was. I was able to do it because I talked to Elliot, who told me about a professor to go to those places, because I went to the library to ask these people where Huey was unfortunately assassinated at, and where the old Black Panther headquarters were. They didn't know any of that, or the townhouse that Huey stayed in, the prison he was incarcerated in. And I said to myself, once I talked to Elliot back on the East Coast, I was in the West Coast at that time, I said, I would have been lost. They have a little small area in Oakland of the Black Panther Party, a little side piece. And I said to myself, all these things, it's up to us to preserve it. But like you said, we're already under the attack of the enemy to salt the earth and destroy our memories of our heroes. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you, and I'm with the movement in preserving what is ours.
Yes.
Thanks for your contribution, Brother Tim.
Indeed. You, right on. The office, the bakery that was right down the street from, that was Merritt College, where now it's a nursing home, I believe. Miss Huey P. Newton Chairman Bobby Silhouette, and even Merritt College, they moved the actual college up in Skyline. In fact, that's what we had done the 50th year anniversary. I say we into the Black Panther Party Cubs. We had done it in contrast to the gala that they tried to throw about the 50th. They tried to have a big wine and cheese shindig, and we had to do it in contrast to this attempt to co-opt the 50th anniversary of Black Panther Party. But the bakery you're talking about, where the papers are englossed, embossed inside, encased.
Exactly.
Right. Excellent points you brought up. But to have that, and again, just to reiterate what we're talking about, the importance of maintaining, because again, a lot of times we have generations come up and we get information in a reactionary way. We hear about it later on, and we don't
we don't know about our predecessors, what happened to us, you know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like they say, it's hard raising an orphan horse. They say because an orphan horse doesn't know even the trot pattern, the step pattern, you know what I'm saying? And just even though the inspiration with those articles alone, you know, I always, you know what I'm saying, when I'm in Oakland, I make it mandatory, stop by there, I make sure I go by Lake Merritt, I go, you know what I'm saying, I go by the historical sites, you know what I'm saying, to the courthouse, you know what I'm saying, you know what I'm saying, the jail, all that, you know, go through Alameda County. It's important that these type of conversations, like, in fact, we have tours, I think we feel fortunate to have the widow, my mother, going to be on right there December 4th, Tuesday, telling what happened. We're going to be right in front of the house that Chairman Frere was assassinated at. What happened? And this is important because other communities, from the womb to the tomb, they talk about, you know, the symbolism. And the state knows that we have a wall on Madison, on the west side of Chicago with a mural of Chairman Frere. They've been trying everything in under the sun, you know what I'm saying, to get this wall. You know what I'm saying? We have, you know, so our legacy is more important than our life. Our legacy is more important than our life.
You're right, Brother Cherry, because we live through our legacy. When we're not around, exactly, we're not around. These symbols and his history and what's left behind is that tangible thing that will always be memorabilia. That's why people sell memorabilia, because the memory will be around when we're not.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Thank you for your contribution, Brother Tim.
Right.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work. Love you.
Yes,
stay strong.
Love you. Love
Black power.
Right on. Black power. Right on.
We got about 10 more minutes, Richard.
Okay, then.
Let's go. Let's move to our last call. And before we leave, again, Chairman Fred, I want you to give out any information as far as.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to 646. 646?
What's happening to you, Brother Fred, and to Elliot and Richard? I want to first say this. May we stand up and take a moment of silence for that no good, filthy, stinking cracker, George W. H. Bush, and let you know the wiggle wig. You know, Elliot, you can't say it, and I know Richard can't say it, but listen, I'm going to say it. George Bush was a murderous, filthy, stinking, no good cracker, you wiggle, who did more to hurt black people than one will ever admit. And just like you said earlier today, you got a whole bunch of Negroes on terrestrial radio crying, scratching, and doing all sorts of ungodly things in the name of that no good bastard. And tomorrow in Chicago, you'll have your boy, Mason, whatever that nutcase is, Perry Smalls. Then you'll have Uncle Cliff. He'll be on there crying about Bush, never telling the truth about Bush. Now, I'm going to say this, and all jokes aside, if we don't tell the truth about the enemies and what they've done to our people, in the name of America, we'll never be free. And that's just the fact of the matter. Because George Bush gave us Willie Cawton. And the thing, to be honest with you, that I'm most mad about him is he gave us that baby Tom, ain't even worthy of being the Uncle Tom, Clarence Thomas. It's just like McClain gave us that no good whore, Sarah Palin. You know, the reality is that we expect people in their so-called demise and make them into heroes like that warmongering, no good, filthy, stinking John McClain. When it's all said and done, those people never did anything good for African people. Now, let me get to you, Brother Fred. I just would really like to ask you this. As someone who's been in Chicago all of your life, I would like to know, why is it that no one has been able to stop the fratricide in Chicago
And we're supposed to have the number one organization, supposedly a militancy in Black America, and that being their home base. The only man in America who could draw a million people. I want to know why we haven't been able to stop the fratricide in Chicago.
I think we should. One of the setbacks, even with the question, I think we need to struggle to put it in this correct context. The genocide in Chirac, and that's what's been. A setback, even with the struggle we're dealing with, what's happening here, because it's like a doctor does a synopsis. If the incorrect premise is laid out, an architect is going to redo a house, and they keep on saying, "How are we going to do this? How are we going to fix this trailer?" It's going to always come up wrong. Even like the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, he brought these different entertainers on to go against us. We pushed and promoted and politicized the term Chirac. A lot of people said they had an issue with that term. We said, no, we add on to the old saying that said God created Africans and America made niggas. We add on to that the mayors and the machine manufactured Chirac. He brought this rapper, they call him Nuisance, they funded him, they paid him and say, go against this, say Chicago, don't say Chirac. And people come on saying this fratricide. Even Kanye West in that song with Jay-Z, Murders of Excellence, they said the fratricide. This question say, well, why is there no mention about genocide? Why is there no mention about the cartel's presence in this city? Why is there no mention about the movie El Chapo being refused to be played in Chicago? Why is there no mention about Norfolk Railroad Road on a weekly basis on the South Side, Inglewood, North Lawndale, putting fully equipped assault rifles in these babies' hands? Why is there no mention, no connection about Jimmy Iovine, Interscope Records? Soon as these young cats get signed, they mysteriously die. You know, so why is there no mention about the 290 Expressway, known as the heroin highway? Why is there no mention about Cook County at one time per capita being the largest county of Black people in the country? Cook County Jail being the largest county jail in the country, and the fact that Sheriff Tom Dart said on 60 Minutes that Cook County Jail serves the largest mental health institution in the country. No, you'll say that. In fact, the director of the county jail, now that they brought in, her specialty, her niche is about mental health illness. Why did we, no connection that the mayor of Chicago, the first edict, the first thing he signed on was to close down the mental health facilities in the Black community? Why is another correlation drawn between the forcing of Ritalin and narcotics on these babies to turn them dope fiends like the British did to the Chinese, what they call the opium wars? That has to be the premise about this house, not this trailer, but this house. It has to be the premise about that. And also, those Negroes who are complicit, because it ain't just Uncle Sam, it's Sambo also. If that's not the Gringos, it's some Negroes who benefiting up for this here. Who, you know what I'm saying? Go look at the funeral homes that are profiting. You know what I'm saying? Go look at the they broke American history records. This gangster Rahm Emanuel closed down over 50 public schools at one time. Then after that, he came with a propaganda bomb. His brother, Ari Emanuel, who Steven Spielberg don't even stand in his shadows, came up with a movie, a propaganda piece, building them up. You know what I'm saying? This, in regards to the case of Darion Albert. The school, the finger, and they made it to this black-on-black crime, this, you know what I'm saying, this fratricide. In the gating, they make it like these kids just killed each other. They just killed this boy. You had even on the Obama administration, when he brought in Arne Duncan to be the National Secretary of Education after he wreaked havoc through this city. They gave an image of his fratricide about Finger High School when Darion Albert got killed. We call cases because we wouldn't expose the background. We exposed how Chicago had the most military academies per capita in the country. How they closed down the schools at Argyle Garden, took those children under a program called Renaissance 2010,
took those children up out of Argyle Garden with no transitional periods, took them babies, packed them over there by Finger High School, which was create an antagonistic situation. It was a class contradiction. Just like you had in Rwanda with a Belgium and a French. They took a people and they exploited class contradictions. We said the Hutus and Tutsis going down at it. And so they put them babies over there, created they didn't take no rocket scientists. They knew what was going to happen over there. The same day, the police was outside waiting when that boy got beat down there in Albert at Finger High School. They said they locked them children outside. But all they gave the people was this emotional response to trigger their guts to say black on black crime. No, we got to start the conversation up correctly. It's genocide if we talk about addressing this house, not this trailer.
Mm.
Brother Fred?
Yes, sir.
I stand to be corrected. And like you said, it definitely is genocide. I didn't want to use the word because it's a little too extreme and harsh. But then again, we are at extreme and harsh times. My last question to you is this. They say that they got over 20 people in Chicago running for mayor. When it's all said and done, what white man or Baba Louie is going to win it out? Will Chewy come to the rescue and save the Negro? Or will there be somebody else to come forward with a brown face or one of us to lead us out of that absolutely genocidal madness, my brother? And the best to you. And listen, last thing, Brother Ralph, Muwadu Baruti is the leader that we should be following at this time, and you should check out the book, Sovereignty. Hold up, brothers, and keep up the good work. Elliot, put me on mute right quick.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your call.
Yes, thank you, brother, for your call and your question and your comment. Chicago... Frank Sinatra said Chicago was his kind of town. He meant that. Gangster, gangster. The electoral part. In fact, Philadelphia is probably one of the closest cities I see. I mean, everything with the mafioso, the Frank Rizzos, and the likes, the whole connection. You know, so this
there
is,
you go.
You know what I'm saying? This is that, you know, we're talking about in particular the electoral political machine.
And excuse me, Brother Fred, because yes, what you touched there is important to me, because in this time, when we're looking at the international side of this, it is the mafia approach,
yes,
which the federal, yes, government had utilized over and over again, yes, especially, yes, in the last 80 years. And yes, we don't know what kind of stick up stuff they got on them,
yes,
when they're supposed to be legitimate. And relationships. So I agree with you. Philadelphia and Chicago, and yes, it's just a question about style.
Yes, yes.
Chairman
sometimes
Fred.
Sometimes they resort to putting a Negro face on it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So the deal is, you don't ask the question. You know, so you don't know if they're gonna come with directly a Rudolph Giuliani, or they might use Nicky Barnes. You know what I'm saying? But the plan is to push dope. Put needles in our veins. Crack pipes in our mouths, you know what I'm saying, and bodies in the penitentiaries and also in the graveyards. So, you know, but it's a policy, it's a politic of the state that they go. That's the agenda. And this, I recall some years back, this cat, somebody was running for office in Chicago, and I said, man, he lost that election. And one of my brothers who I work with, he said, Chad, what make you think he necessarily lost? And then he was giving all the insights, how much the guy got paid, you know what I'm saying, the different the funding. So it's so many different dynamics. And see, a lot of times they give us these different terms in the hit side, and we, you know what I'm saying, like we automatically just, you know, draw these, have these reaction and responses. Like, Like, for example, the University of Chicago had this event the other day that we talked about. And the sister, she said, well, Chairman, how they making money? They say it's free. I said, you know, they throw words like that to us, free and charity. You know, and Tupac said, everybody know charity don't get to the hood. Everybody know. Well, Jay-Z and Beyonce donated this. Everybody, philanthropy is big business. it's big business. So you have these different elections and games and chess pieces they move around, and you know, saying to distract you and get you. And you know, because one thing for sure that this system needs, one main ingredient that they need is the people to believe in it.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And they need that. And sometimes they know the people start waving, so, oh man, you know, the gig is up, man. I ain't got no more faith in this here. And they say, all right, take that worm off, throw in the modern day baits on that hook. You know what I'm saying? The wigglers. You know what I'm saying? So what you mean? Throw a black wiggler on there, you know. So that'll turn them on. And then just to get them and get you back in engaged, but the deal is get us back into the frying pan, you know. And so we just gotta stay the course and dig and whatever concessions may come down, as Franz Fanon said, we must be able to accept that concession, but never compromise our principles. You know what I'm saying? But also remain steadfast. The bottom line is we get to have self-determination.
Chairman Fred, give out any information, how the people can reach you, how they can donate, anything you want to give, the floor is yours.
Yes, sir. Thank you. We reached the area code 773-256-9451. Area code 773-256-9451. They can email me at chairmanfredjr@gmail.com, chairmanfredjr@gmail.com. We need your support at gofundme.com/SaveTheHamptonHouse. Also, the PayPal, ChairmanFredJr@gmail.com. PayPal.com, ChairmanFredJr@gmail.com on PayPal. We need your support. We're trying to raise resources from the day-to-day situation, just from water to paint, school supplies, you name it. We put out a call. Anybody can donate some exterminator services. You know what I'm saying? Whatever people can come with. You know, so we need people over there. So again, even their best resource themselves. You know what I'm saying? People can come through and say, listen, I ain't got no money, but let me help do this. Let me help do that. Just come on with it. We at 804. South 17th Avenue, 804 South 17th Avenue, Maywood, Illinois, 60153. They can mail checks there, you know what I'm saying, to Effect Real Change, care of Save the Hampton House. They come on directly this Tuesday, December 4th, 12 o'clock, high noon. Come to the house, Chairman Fred is assassinated at 12 o'clock. We're going to head on to the wall in Madison, California. They're going to head on back to the house that Chairman Fred grew up in, 804 South 17th Avenue, Maywood, Illinois, 60153. Say, what's the hashtag? Save the Hampton House. Save the Hampton House. It's bigger than the building, more significant than the structure.
Okay. Chairman Fred, I'm going to forward you an address where you can send me that information. I'll post it on the Time for Awakening website.
Appreciate it.
We'll be in touch because I want you to come back. We're gonna talk about a little politics and how we should be involved one way or the other in moving our people forward, not this system, but moving our people forward and how we can utilize it to do it. But you know I'll be in touch, brother.
Yes, sir. Let's hit the streets tomorrow for Mumia Abu Jamal. Free Mumia Abu Jamal, free Mumu Nine, free them all.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
We'll be in touch. Right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Richard, interesting conversation with the chairman. You know, he mentioned what you mentioned when this show started out about the preservation of our legacy and these people making big business out of our legacy here in this country and icons that have contributed to it. I mean, I don't think he heard. In fact, I know he didn't because he was in an interview with another station that first hour. But when he said that a white man got Fred Hampton, I'm telling you. I mean, that's just what you was just talking about.
You see it now. You know, it might be another time that I don't want to go in, but where people talk about white women who are teaching in the school system, look at the academics that are writing about our enslavement specifically in every aspect.
you'll find that a lot of them, or what I'm finding, I might be looking at a very small slice, are a lot of white women, a lot of white people that are writing about our stuff, which means that, as Dr. Obadeli would say, in that knowledge production, they are creating the narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
And legitimizing it as research. Now, and if we don't get in front of that, as they terraform this whole thing for their, and I have to say it this way, for their black people, because they're doing it for their black people, who will be puppeting what they give them. You know, it's just simple as that. So yeah, I mean, when we're looking at it from, you know, that sovereignty perspective, from that, you know, our own decolonization, that's the only conclusion we can come to.
Wow. Oh boy. Well, the struggle continues. That's all I can say.
Yes, sir.
I want to do it under. Let you know about the lineup this week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 in the afternoon. Later on Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for Awakening. On Wednesday, from 8 to 10, Sister POC and Revive is back from 8 to 10 on Time for Awakening. And then Time for Awakening is back on Friday from 8 to 10. We got a couple new programs going to start this month, too. I'll inform the listening audience about the titles and the times of the new programming that's going to start in this month of December on Time for Awakening. Also, the revamping of the website and make it more streamlined. Products going to be added, and just a lot of new bells and whistles on the Time for Awakening website. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn. Such a small part of
heaven. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. Children.